Did you wish to reserve time for the
motion? Yes, Your Honor, 3 minutes, and assuming it's okay with the court, I've given 2 minutes to the counsel for the receiver in addition to the 10 minutes that Mr. Belikov has for their.
I think we said no to that.
Oh, you did?
Okay. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Okay. All right. Good morning. Steve Block for defendants, the Hugheses. This is a case about the role of a receiver in an involuntary receivership, the scope of a receiver's authority, abuse of the receivership process. A receiver is an agent of a trial court, has a fiduciary duty to all concerned, all who have interest in the estate, including the owners of the estate, the debtors. You must be disinterested, dispassionate, objective, just like a trial judge, objective. A receiver is not and may not be a creditor's advocate, one of the claimants in the receivership process, but protecting his interests against anybody else's, especially the debtors, the owners of the estate. Here we have a powerful, wealthy creditor who obtains a judgment against impecunious defendants, debtors, forces them into involuntary receivership, has his colleague appointed receiver, takes responsibility for payment of that receiver, and unbeknownst to the debtors whose property he administers, he enters into a settlement agreement with the one claimant, which includes conveyance of...
Why do we care?
I'm sorry?
Why do we care?
The context...
What remedy are you asking for?
I'm asking for the court's understanding that the abuse of the process...
You're not going to get understanding. You're going to get an opinion. So what remedy are you asking
We're asking for the court to set aside an order that the trial court issued that authorized...
That was the subject of a previous appeal, right?
It was a, well, not substantive.
I mean, all of these things you were talking about were subjects of a previous appeal.
They were, well, we had...
The outrageous behavior, everything. That was part of the appeal that was dismissed, right?
No, that's not correct.
Are you asking us here today to reinstate your...
The underlying appeal.
Okay, that appeal was dismissed by
Correct.
This court. And then, I guess you litigated that about a year ago, all the reasons why you didn't want the appeal to be dismissed.
But
just follow along with me. Am I missing something here?
Yes.
I mean, the appeal was dismissed by this court, correct?
The appeal was dismissed.
And there was a petition for review.
Correct.
And the petition for review was denied.
That's correct.
And the mandate issued.
Yes, Your Honor.
All right. And under the rules of appellate procedure, when the mandate issues, the Court of Appeals loses the power to modify its prior decision. Correct?
That's not correct in this instance. But
it is generally correct because that is what the rule says. Once the mandate issues, we lose the power to modify our previous decision, unless there are certain exceptions.
That's right.
Which you want to talk to us about. But I just want to make sure we're starting from the same framework here.
Well, what I think...
I'm incorrect. That's normally what happens under Route 12.7.
Normally what happens...
Loses the power to modify its decision. Those are the words of the rule, are they not?
Okay,
now just let me go on for another second or two here before you start wanting to make exceptions. But so that happened a year ago, notwithstanding briefs that raised... the various issues that you're raising here, such as the fact that an appeal is not property, and so on and so forth. So I guess the question is, how would we ever get back to this, and why would we want to?
The appeal earlier was not on the substance. It was an emergency motion to block enforcement of that order. It wasn't subject to, you know, the full briefing that we have here today.
It was a discretionary review and not appeal as a matter of right?
It was a motion.
The trial court had approved the decision of the settlement. And so one of the terms of the settlement was to dismiss the appeal.
That's right.
And so in order to accomplish that and to implement the settlement, the receiver, I believe, by stipulation with Mr. Belikov, moved to dismiss the appeal that you are now trying to revive.
That's correct.
And the court granted that motion.
That's correct.
With an order signed by three judges. After having reviewed fairly extensive briefing on many of the subjects that you're talking about today. Now, there was not an opinion, but there was an order.
I'm not.
Is that order not final?
I'm not sure about the full circumstances of that order. I'm not prepared here to discuss that. The briefing that is before the court today is different than the briefing that was there to try to.
In what respect?
It goes to the substance of why the trial court erred with that taking that action.
The only thing that's really different about today is the Homestead claim. That wasn't raised a year ago.
That's true. But there are new arguments raised here that would be more appropriate for consideration in a full-blown appeal. I mean, why would this appeal even be taking place?
Well, that's a real good question.
It wasn't dismissed.
The other appeal is dismissed.
The underlying.
And you're back here now, a year later, saying, well, you've got some arguments and you want us to reinstate that appeal, which has already been dismissed.
You have a right to a review of the Superior Court's ruling on the Homestead exemption. That's why this would not be summarily dismissed, because that ruling was made and not part of what happened before. So it's not a mystery.
When the court denied the motion to stay enforcement of that order pending other activity, why wasn't the appeal dismissed altogether? The reason is that not all the arguments were made at that point. We're only talking about why it should be.
The appeal was not dismissed altogether. It was dismissed altogether. No. There's an order that dismisses the appeal.
You're talking about the underlying appeal, but
yes.
This appeal that we're here for today was not dismissed as part of that, because we only filed a motion seeking to temporarily stay enforcement of the order. Now we're trying to have it vacated.
You're trying to get that appeal reinstated.
The underlying appeal.
Yes.
Not the one we're here for today.
That's why you're here.
That's correct.
And the respondents laid it out in their responsive brief. They said this case is moot because this court can't grant that relief.
That's not accurate.
The fact is that we cannot grant relief when the mandate has been issued. There's no motion to recall the mandate.
That's not accurate.
If there was, we wouldn't grant it.
You can answer the question.
It's not accurate under the circumstances of this case based on RPC 2.5 C2 and 12.9, because if the court finds there was an error of law committed in previous proceedings, it can reverse the mandate and consider it. That's exactly
right,
what these provisions are for.
You're eating into your rebuttal time, which you can do if you'd like.
Well, I suppose I should. I mean, you know, these rules speak for themselves. They're briefed out. But if the court were to find, yes, there was an error committed below, that the trial court didn't have authority to rule that the appeal had no merit and dismiss it, after full consideration here, it could come back and to reverse the mandate. That's in the rule itself. It's harder to think of a better application for it than a situation like that, like this.
What case do you think illustrates the authority of this court to do what you're saying?
The rules themselves.
Now, what case?
I don't know a case, but okay, the rules themselves are pretty specific.
Thanks.
Yeah. I'm sensing that the court doesn't want to focus on the
We're interested in all the issues. I'm just monitoring your time. You got about 2 minutes left of your total
okay.
time at this point.
All right. Well, I guess what I should do is focus right now on the Homestead issue. That is a constitutional right, one that is automatic. It need not be preserved by some mechanism like a declaration. A declaration was filed at a certain time, the reason being that that we wanted to present something to the trial court at a time a decision was being made, but not because it was a necessary step. There is no response in the motion to the motion below for us to obtain Homestead. Any argument made now would be improper. So, you know, on that grounds, it's it cannot be waived. It should have been granted as part of the of this settlement order. We feel, generally that the court, the trial court, has no authority to treat a defense of appeal as an item of property over which the receiver takes control and can bargain away. as part of this.
Why would it be different than any other asset over which a receiver has authority, given the broad equitable power the receiver has?
Because the statutes define what a property is. It includes choses of action, which are defined by the Supreme Court to include such things as claims against something else, but not statutory rights to defend against claims against the estate. And of anything, it would be the receiver's obligation to preserve the rights of the estate to have claims against it diminished by fully briefed appeals that were, you know, ready for consideration. So, you know, the question is just that. Is a defensive appeal a matter that, or item of property under the statute or under the rule under which the trial court can allow a receiver to bargain away? Can, in doing so, can the trial court conclude the defensive appeal has no merit and therefore should be dismissed as a bargaining chip in favor of satisfaction of a judgment? Does it have that authority?
Okay, you've exhausted your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. Larry Locker of Summit Law Group, appearing on behalf of the plaintiffs and respondents. Your Honors, I'd like to start with the issue of mootness that was discussed before. I think the court summarized.
Are you saying the whole appeal is moot?
Yes, we do believe
the,
that.
The prior order that was entered before the ruling on the homestead exemption issue. So that can't possibly be precluded.
No, I stand corrected, Your Honor.
So if you're
talking
live
about
issue,
the
issue, then the case isn't, then the whole thing.
Right, right. No, the homestead issue would be, well, actually, let me go back, Your Honor. The reason that I think the entire appeal is moot is because there's nothing that the court could do that would restore the parties to the position that they were at previously. And the
we could grant a judgment against your client in favor of the appellant for the amount of the homestead.
Okay, I see. So if the homestead can be singled out for relief, that portion of it, you're right, would not be moved.
Well, it's a don't you agree that it's a different type of issue? It arose after this other kerfuffle took place.
That is correct, Your Honor.
And that's never come to us before.
That has not come to you before. That's
so why
correct.
Don't you tell us why the Superior Court judge was right?
Okay. So the reason that that Judge Spearman got it right on the homestead issue as well is because, among other things, the Hugheses waived their right to homestead in the trial court, and they did it twice. They did it first at the hearing on the order approving the settlement, where they objected to the settlement, but they did so on the basis that they didn't want their underlying appeal dismissed, but they said absolutely nothing about homestead, even though the Mercer Island House was one of the items that was discussed and was part of the settlement that was approved at that hearing. They then waived it a second time when they came before this court and offered their Mercer Island House as security to secure a temporary stay of a commissioner's decision. And they did so without offering or even mentioning any rights of homestead. Now, we don't believe, as we've indicated in the briefing, that they have a proper claim to homestead in the first place. But even if they did, Your Honor, what it would mean is that they were in a position analogous to someone who sells their family residence to a third party at an agreed-upon price, collects the purchase price, and when it comes time to convey title, says, "You owe me an extra $125,000 for homestead." And of course, we know somebody wouldn't be permitted to do it. They would have waived it. That wasn't part of the bargain. That's exactly what they did here, and we think that that supports Judge Spearman's decision to include the Mercer Island property without reservation of homestead.
On the issue of mootness, with respect to the requested remedy of reinstating the appeal, counsel argues that although the RAP that you have cited, 12.7, indicates that we have lost authority to modify that decision, that we nevertheless could if we, I guess, apply the law of the case doctrine, because here it is, the same case in front of us again, and Do you agree with that interpretation of the rules, that we have that power to do so? Whether we would exercise it or not is a different question. But
yeah, no, Your Honor, we, Judge Becker, we disagree with that position. We don't believe that that rule, which is RAP 2.5, that does deal with law of the case doctrine, but that's exactly what it deals with. It is not a jurisdictional rule, and it's not a basis for reopening an appeal.
Well, it does say in RAP 12.7 that there's which is the provision that talks about how we lose the power to modify our decision. But then it goes on, and then at the end there's subsection D, special rule for law of the case. The appellate court retains the power to change decision as provided in 2.5, I'm sorry, not A, but 2.5C2. And that is the law of the case doctrine restricted where there's a prior appellate court decision.
So under that, Your Honor, if the court would be revisiting a prior decision that was entered.
And it says, and where yep. justice would best be served, decide the case on the basis of the appellate court's opinion of the law at the time of the later review. Now, there are cases that say that that may be granted discretionarily where the holding of the prior appeal is clearly erroneous and the application of the doctrine would result in a manifest injustice.
Yes, Your Honor. And for those reasons, we don't believe that RAP 2.5 applies here. This case certainly has had no shortage of briefing, both in the trial courts and the appellate courts, and motions, to stay for review, et cetera. There was no manifest error about what happened earlier.
Do we correctly understand that the issues raised in this brief by the appellant with regard to why you're not supposed to, why the receiver can't stipulate away or agree to dismiss an appeal, that those arguments were raised in this court in connection with the motion to dismiss a year ago? Or do you know?
That's the motion to dismiss a year ago did address the arguments relating to the receiver's authority, Your Honor, in the briefing. The additional ground that the appellant cite is RAP 2.9, or 12.9, which says that apart from fraud and mistake, the court can recall a mandate to determine if the trial court has complied with an earlier decision of the appellate court in the same case. And again, it says an earlier decision of the appellate court in the same case. And of course, this is a rule that allows appellate courts the power to ensure compliance with the court's orders. And here, the Hugheses can't point to any earlier decision in need of enforcement. And, of course, the subject decision is the dismissal for which mandate is issued and is certainly not need of enforcement. So we don't believe that 12.9 would apply either. As far as the scope of the receiver's authority, we think that, quite frankly, Judge Spearman, who was in an excellent position to judge this case, got it right. She was not only the judge that entered the order approving the settlement, she was also the judge who entered the order appointing the receiver. And, of course, that's the order that specifies the scope of the receiver's authority. That's to say that she was very well versed in the receiver's authority at the time she entered the settlement order. The case law weighs in our favor. There is some disagreement in the federal bankruptcy cases, but the weight of that authority is in our favor. The Spencer case is a Washington Supreme Court case. It says that receivers can go ahead and negotiate so-called defensive rights or claims against the debtor, the debtor's estate. There's no reason why a receiver shouldn't be able to do that. And, of course, there's also the policy of not wanting to tie a receiver's hands. If the Hugheses' exemption for so-called defensive appeals were granted, receivers would be greatly hampered in their duties. They wouldn't, for example, be able to negotiate settlements of appeals, even though estate assets were being consumed in the form of attorney's fees. They wouldn't be able to do what happened here and, for example, negotiate appellate rights in order to acquire assets or reduce the debts of the estate. Judge Spearman found that this settlement was fair and equitable to all concerned. We believe she got that right. Among other benefits, it put an end to this four-year-old litigation that's cost the parties millions of dollars. Those benefits extended to the Hugheses because while they complain about it, that settlement allowed them to walk away from $4 million in otherwise non-dischargeable debt, non-dischargeable in bankruptcy due to findings of fraud, at a $3 million discount. Her decision was fair and equitable to all the parties, and we believe that it should be affirmed. The Hugheses have also complained that somehow this amounts to a thwarting of their so-called constitutional right to appeal. We know there is no constitutional right to appeal in a civil case, and more appropriately in this case, it's not a question about getting rid of an appeal right. It's a question of who gets to decide what to do with that appeal right once the extraordinary remedy of receivership has been imposed. The Hugheses indicated from their conduct that they were not in a position to do that. Thank you, Your Honors.
All right. That concludes the argument in this case. We will be in recess.